is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer, bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, check 1, 2. Just introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Lisa Tran from Orlando, Florida, but I've lived in the Washington, D.C. area for about 9 years.
All right, and with her?
Amber McKinney from Southwest Virginia, but currently living in D.C., going to PT school at Marymount University.
Hardest question is always first, what are we drinking?
I'm drinking an Imperial beer. I think this is the beer of Costa Rica.
It is the beer of Costa Rica.
It's pretty good.
Cheers, Lisa. Let's make a little...
Cheers.
There we go. And Amber?
I went with something a little more fruity. I'm drinking a Lagarta. Grapefruit.
Just let's cheers. All right. There we go. I just want to invite you guys on the show and just get some of your stories. We've been here for now more than a week. Been working in Manos Abiertos together. You guys were on my team. I just wanted to hear some stories, some things that you'll be sharing with family and friends when you guys go back home. Really. So I'm looking for a serious story. So maybe just something that moved you or something that, you know, kind of touched you or that you're going to kind of take with you like a souvenir after we graduate in a couple months and into your PT career.
I'll go first. I saw a patient who I evaluated with Trevor, but we had a patient who was 2 years old. She had a lot of neurological deficits as a result of being abused. She was born with no problems at all, just, you know, a normal, you know, physical presentation, cognitively intact. But as a result of the abuse, she had hydrocephaly, she had gross motor delays in general. And when we were working with her, she was having several mini seizures.
Wow.
They lasted less than 10 seconds each, but I was with her for about an hour.
Had you ever dealt with something like that before?
No, never.
Working,
no? Never.
Well, that's got to be kind of jarring.
It is.
We read about that stuff and we learn what to do, but when it's in front of you?
Yeah, it's so difficult. I mean, also because I've never worked with a pediatric population, that made it even more difficult.
Yeah.
Just because I had to really think about what to look for and how to exactly do an evaluation.
Oh, we're doing a cheers right now. The professors are making us cheers. Such a rough school to go to. Cheers! Cheersing for our professor, Diana Vasquez. I think that's great.
Yeah.
The middle of the episode.
Yeah.
So you never really had to work with something like that.
No.
When you see someone having a seizure, even if it's for only 10 seconds, that's tough.
As a PT, we really try to do that the best that we can for every patient, no matter what.
So what'd you do as soon as you spotted it, as soon as you knew it, that oh shit moment, oh my gosh, this is what I'm seeing right in front of me?
Well, I just looked at her eyes and her body and just seeing what she was doing. Was it really a full-on seizure or was it like a mini seizure?
What did you feel like at that moment once you realized what was actually happening? I would have freaked out.
I didn't know what to do. I mean, I told the physical therapist who works there here in Costa Rica what was happening. Luckily, there's a translator with us. I don't know that much Spanish. So luckily, we had a translator with us who was able to tell him.
Yeah.
He knew that this patient was having these mini seizures as well. Luckily, I had Kelly with me, who's one of our professors on our trip with us. And she was telling this PT, you know, check the medications. Maybe it's medication related. She shouldn't be having this many mini seizures within an hour. That helped. That helped a lot. But, I mean, it was just really difficult.
Well, you're explaining two different things. You're explaining what you felt like, and then you're explaining the logic. And I think that a trip like this lets us put those two things together. We can read about this stuff in class all we want, but when you see a baby that you're treating that you're responsible for that particular moment having a seizure, it's on you. And then it's good to have that professor say, well, what do you think is causing it? And then all of a sudden you go, okay, let me step back and actually think about this critically. Let me actually use the education that I've gotten.
Exactly.
But sometimes you need that. I can think my way through this.
Yeah.
And that's a big step.
It was huge. When Trevor and I were evaling this patient, he's not really experienced with pediatric patients either. We had to go back to last semester where we learned about pediatrics and really think about what do we need to look at. So after we looked at all of her reflexes and just gross motor, just her presentation, we figured out that her developmental age is probably about 3 months.
And she was how old?
2 years old.
Okay.
So that was really difficult. And not to mention, She was fussing the entire time. She was crying. She was frustrated. She's not used to people touching her and moving her around. Luckily, we had a toy there that it's like a zebra toy where you can have a baby sit on it and it kind of bounces up and down. We got her on that, and luckily she loved it. She was smiling and laughing.
You found something to get input to her that she actually reacted to in a positive way, which is good.
And that, for Trevor and I, was like a golden moment.
That's a big win.
Yeah, because we realized that she was having fun. She was having a great time, and her laugh echoed throughout the entire lobby that we were in. It was great.
It's awesome.
So that was definitely like the golden moment, probably of the whole trip, to be honest.
Yeah. How about a funny moment? What's something that made you giggle?
Funny moment was, I mean, I know this story was already told, but when Bridget confused the word cabeza, which means the head, she confused that with cerveza, which is beer.
Whoops.
So she kept telling her patient, turn your beer. And luckily this patient understood what she was talking about.
Understood enough to know that the crazy American didn't know what the heck they were talking about.
Yeah, that was definitely hilarious.
Wait, you forgot about us being in tunnel with Sunri.
Oh my gosh,
tell that story.
You can tell the story. That was so funny.
So Lisa and I, we are working with a patient. She has cerebral palsy. She cognitively is intact. She can communicate her wants and her needs, which, not knowing Spanish, doesn't really pair well together. With translators, you can figure out what she wants to do. She's really active, and whenever she comes to physical therapy, she's ready to get to work and get out of her chair because that's where she spends most of her time. So there is a tunnel that's probably large enough, I would imagine, for a toddler in the PT gym.
Like a pop-up tunnel, one of those expandable ones,
So like what you would picture like in a fun house or something. We want her to work on using like her upper body strength to like crawl forward. Her legs are pretty limp and she doesn't have a lot of motor function there, but her arms, she kind of has a lot of spasticity that's interfering with her ability to actively use them. But we want her to try to put weight through them, get compression through the joint, get some volitional movement going on. So I'm like, Lisa, why don't we get that tunnel and have her crawl through it? And I think at first it was, we weren't really looking at the size of ourselves and the size of the tunnel. So we get her in and Lisa's at one end and I'm at the other. And I'm like, all right, maybe this wasn't such a good idea, but she was already so excited that how do you tell an 8-year-old girl, sorry, we don't think we can take you through the tunnel anymore.
You don't tell her that.
Because we're too big to fit in there. Lisa got her legs and I crawled in the tunnel. I told Lisa before I went in, I was like, you might have to cut me out of here. I'm not really sure, but we'll figure it out. So at one point, our patient was halfway in the tunnel and Lisa's at the other end and I was already in. And I'm like, Lisa, I'm sorry, you're going to have to come in. And she's like, are you sure about that? Then all three of us were in a tunnel that's probably like 4 feet long, if you can just picture two adults and a child in this tunnel.
I was treating a patient near the window when you guys were doing that. It looked like a giant human finger trap with legs.
Like an inchworm. It was like moving along
with legs
the floor
at both
with
ends.
Us.
Flashes of human centipede, but...
That's what I would call it. We were like rolling around in this thing. I think we rolled like halfway across the floor. But just seeing like the laughter that was coming from her, she was just giggling. At one point she called it her cabin. She was, I don't know the Spanish word for that, but that's what she was saying. The translator was able to let me know. And she just laid down and said she didn't want to get out. So it was really cool because she was so happy. And I mean, just like the screams coming from that room were like filled with joy, and Lisa and I were, you know, just laughing and having a great time. I almost forgot I was working, so.
Yeah. Well, I think that just shows that PT came to a spot where a kid didn't have a chance to be a kid, and you gave her a chance to do that, and that's the whole, I mean, I think sometimes we get lost. You know, we get in a serious profession, and we go through school for a long time, and we spend a lot of money and focus, and we try to be serious, try to be professionals, as professional as possible. And then when you're working with a kid, you got to remember, be a kid. How's the kid thinking? Amber can't comment right now because she's got a mouthful of beer. Take your time. Fill that in. I'll just keep rambling while you're doing that. And you're right. The laughter from situations like that kind of gets infectious, and the rest of the patients pick up on that. And that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, Amber, you owe me a serious story. I think I already know which patient you're going to talk about.
I'm going to start off by saying that I try not to be an emotional person, and usually whenever I feel...
Now, hold on. I want to tell a story about you from first year PT school.
Hey, that does not count.
The story is about you and what kind of person you are. I just met Amber first weekend of PT school. We're out at a bar in D.C., And I turned, there was maybe a group of five or six of us, and I turned and Amber's crying. I mean, this is like three or four beers in, and I'm like, okay, did some dude just do something inappropriate? You know, I get all macho, like, what happened?
You have to give me alcohol or take away my sleep to get my tears to start.
And Amber had explained that she was really nervous that what if one day she was working with a patient and she forgot something and she wasn't able to help them. And I said, first I said, relax, it's going to be a while. And then I said, you know, that's kind of cool that she actually cares enough to get emotional at the beginning of PT school. Care what's going to happen at the end of PT school. So now talk about this story, because I think this kind of goes hand in hand.
Well, can I just say, Lisa's looking at me and nodding her head saying, oh yeah, that definitely sounds like you.
So tell the story, because I was watching you. We had a fiesta at the residence last night.
So in my defense, I've only had one beer. So if these tears come, they're not alcohol-induced. They're actually real emotions.
I want to set it up. So we had a fiesta for all the residents at Manos Abiertos last night. Piñata, cake, food, ice cream, the whole nine yards. I saw you up on the balcony, which actually leads to the hospital part of the facility where the patients are kept for quarantine, who may be on ventilators and whatnot. And there was a girl sitting in a wheelchair all by herself. I'm going to say she was five. And then I see 15 minutes later, Amber left the party. She's up there with her. She's with someone, because I felt bad. She's watching the party. She's literally watching the entire thing happen. I'm like, that's the worst thing in the world, a kid watching a party. So why'd you go up there? What happened?
I've been working with this patient for the past week every day. I've been like sneaking her name onto my schedule, even though I'm pretty sure she doesn't get PT every day on a regular basis. But I've decided that she needs it every day, or maybe that I just need hugs from her every day. The first day I worked with her, hair literally looked like I stuck my finger into a light socket, because this little girl's climbing all over me, and I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, at one point, I think half of her hand was in my mouth, and the other fingers were up my nose, and I just didn't know what to do.
What's her diagnosis? Why is she at the facility?
So this is just my guess. Like,
because we don't get a lot of records. We don't get a lot of information. We get no information. I don't know how old my patients are.
I've asked what's going on with her, and I haven't really been giving an answer, but from what I can tell is that she has a lot of sensory processing issues. She's very overstimulated and really doesn't know how to regulate herself right now, which is very sad because she's 5 years old, and developmentally I would say she's functioning at about 8 to 10 months. She's not walking, but motor, she is very strong. So we are making a joke one day while working with her. We said, how many PTs does it take to hold down a 5-year-old? And we got to 4, and she's still one.
She's strong.
She is so strong, which is really sad because she is capable of walking, definitely from a motor standpoint. It's not like low tone that's limiting her or anything. It's just putting her feet on the ground is just too much.
She pulls back.
Yeah, it's too much stimulation. Yeah. She loves to cuddle, so she is the greatest hugger ever. If you're having a rough time, like, you know, I mean, these past like couple weeks have been very challenging physically, mentally, emotionally. So seeing her is like the light of my day. It's so exciting just to hug her. What I've really been struggling with over the past few days is I feel like she has so much more potential than she's actually getting out of. Only getting PT once or twice a week, I feel like she really needs some intensive sensory therapy from PT and OT to help her regulate herself. In my mind, she should be ambulating. Right now, she's nonverbal, but she should definitely be communicating.
The facility cares about them deeply. They just don't have the time, or they don't have the resources to give her what she needs right now.
Tremendous care, but if we were in the United States and she had access to the intensive therapy that she needs, I see her being more developmentally progressed than she is right now. I really think she should have had this therapy like 3 years ago, or even from birth. But my guess is that she was born maybe addicted to some type of substance, because there are no facial deformities. Like I said, she's very strong. She has an awesome personality, like very full of life. So unfortunately, I just feel like she's been dealt a bad hand of cards with everything she's dealing with sensory wise, and she can't really calm herself down long enough to learn anything.
But you saw her when we were doing our first couple days of evals, and you got drawn to her.
Because her smile is just like the most beautiful thing in the world. And this is so crazy, but going back to the party that Jimmy brought up, I went upstairs because I knew that the party would be something she would really enjoy. Unfortunately, I couldn't bring her downstairs because she couldn't be around the other residents. But so she and I danced upstairs, and I was with one of my professors, Dr. Venskis. I started asking about adoption.
Why?
Because, I don't know, I feel like this little girl has so much potential, and I just, it like literally breaks my heart to see that she doesn't have access to the type of care that she needs in order to thrive and be successful and get the most out of her life. She's so young. I mean, she's 5 years old.
She's got a chance.
Right now is when it's most crucial for her to get that type of therapy. I think if she continues to stay in a chair and not get to explore her environment in the way that she should, that she's going to deal with this for the rest of her life. She may not even walk because right now her ankles are very weak. She's constantly spraining them. So if you look at her ankles, they're black and blue.
But why'd you go upstairs?
Why did I go upstairs? Well, because I wanted a hug.
Why'd you go upstairs? Seriously.
I don't know. It's very strange. I joke with people that I don't like babies, but I don't know, something with her, like I feel like this really strong connection.
I know the answer. Why'd you go upstairs?
Because I love her.
That's it. Because you cared. That's why. Because you saw a patient and you saw potential. And there's some patients that we're going to work with and we're going to get something out of here, but we're not going to get much progression. And you saw her and you said, oh shit. If she got something as simple as PT, and let's not overcomplicate what we do in a good way. Let's not overcomplicate. But if we could work with her every day, you saw you could get a lot more.
Yeah.
And it bothered you.
Because you
care. That's why you went upstairs.
I'm drawn to her. It's very interesting. She's my favorite.
She's also gorgeous. I mean, she's a gorgeous little girl. She's very cute. But you're absolutely right. I mean, we worked with her, and she's got a ton of potential. And through no fault of the facility she's in, she might not get it.
Right.
And if that doesn't break your heart, you don't have one.
Yeah, I was telling Lisa and Dr. Venskis, I didn't know how I'd sleep for the next 6 months just because it's hard to think about what she's being robbed of. I don't know, but then I started thinking, I was like, wait a minute, did I really just ask about adoption?
You
did. I'm 24 years old, I'm single, and I'm still on my parents' medical insurance.
Guys, she's single.
If I could send my mom a text message, look, oh, by the way, I'm bringing back a 5-year-old girl. I hope you're ready to be a grandma, Mom.
The thing is, we've known each other for 2.5, almost 3 years, and I joined you upstairs when you were working with her during the party. And when you said that, I knew you weren't going to actually bring her home. But if there were anybody on this trip who would actually have adopted a baby on the trip, it would have been you.
I did ask you if they would notice if I stole a child, and you had to stop me.
They would notice missing a baby. They would.
That's ethically incorrect, but I don't know. For a second, I was like, maybe I could just... She's so tiny and compact.
They wouldn't
even
notice.
I'll just sneak her out the front door. I'll come back for the chair later. It's fine.
So, final question for both of you guys. Why should a PT student, why should a practicing PT go on a trip like this? Why?
I just think it's important just to step outside of your comfort zone and to realize that there's something bigger out there that's greater than yourself and your own world. Living in Arlington, Virginia, or just Northern Virginia.
Or America, you know, living in the U.S.
Yeah, just your country. If you get stuck with the day-to-day activities, and I just think it's important to step outside of that, realize that there's something bigger than yourself. There are people out there who need your gifts that you are given. We're all aspiring physical therapists, and I believe that, you know, we have so much to give to others in this world. And I just really feel like it's important to put yourself out there, give people your gifts.
I think sometimes we overcomplicate it, and really it is, you know, working with some patients, just noticing what they need and then giving them that. That's a difficult thing to sometimes do. And maybe we do need 3 years of school to do that, but that's fine. But then don't overlook that. We need to notice what they need and then be able to give them that. And
exactly.
I think when we do step into a place like this where there's nothing in the way, you know, we don't have Wi-Fi. We don't have, fancy equipment. We got a table and a patient and an hour. Go.
Exactly.
And then figure out what they need and then give them that. Don't overthink it. All right, so why should somebody, Amber, why should somebody, that's a great answer. Lisa, great answer. Amber, why should someone who's either, and I think PT students, when I was mentioning this at CSM that I was coming down here, PT students were like, oh, I wish my program did that. And I felt kind of really proud of Marymount for making this a thing that we do. This is our thing. We do this. Why should either a PT student seek out a program like Marymount that does that, or a practicing PT saying, hey, I should take some time out of my busy schedule and take some vacation time or some paid time off and do this? Why is this important?
I think that for PT students, it's really important because I came on this trip, honestly, to make a difference in someone's life, but also because I didn't know when I would be given this opportunity again. You know, as a new grad, you're working a very strict schedule. You can't just say, hey, most jobs wouldn't let you say, hey, I'm going to take 3 weeks off and I'm going to go to another country. Unfortunately, that's just the way that things are. But as a PT student, I had this opportunity. I'm like, I have no idea when I'll get this opportunity again. Why would I pass that up? I just think that I came here to give my services, but I've taken so much more. I think that I've grown as a person. I think that it's been eye-opening to see what goes on the other side of the world. Not that I'm seeing, like, horrible care or that people, you know, are living in poverty really here, but in the United States, we are very blessed with the services that we have, and I think that people with disabilities, children with disabilities, are accepted so much more there. Lisa and I were talking about it, and it's just been kind of life-changing to come here and see that these children that we're working with have literally been abandoned because their parents and society does not accept them here. So be grateful that you live in the U.S. I will go back so much happier thinking, wow, I'm so glad that we have the ADA and that we are accepting of people with disabilities and that they don't get shamed like they do here. It's hard to see. But I think as a working PT, you should come here to, like, further develop yourself. You should work in an environment. If you said, hey, I want to go to wherever you want to go and provide my services, that your company should work with you and make that a possibility. As a student, it's something you'd want to take advantage of because we're only here for 2 weeks, and I feel like I want to extend my stay for 2 more weeks. A lot of us were like, hey, we didn't finish with this patient. Right. What about this patient? Right, oh my gosh, we need to see them again. So if you did take a trip and you decided to go offer your services to another country, it would need to be longer than just a week's stay, you know, because
it's not a vacation. It's not let's pick the nicest place to go to.
Yeah.
Not knocking the weather at Costa Rica, because right now it's March in Virginia. It's cold.
And we're all sunburnt.
But it's a different world here.
Yeah. Just a week isn't going to be long enough. You're going to want more. So
a good note to go out on. So if you had to wrap this trip up in a phrase, what would it be?
I would definitely say pura vida.
Pura vida.
Pura vida. It's the Costa Rican phrase.
It's their motto. It's their life.
Yeah, it's their motto for everything. It just means, like, pure life. And it's just a saying that they use for everything.
All right, Amber, can't use pura vida because Lisa just stole it from me.
Okay.
What would you say?
So I have something. On the first night that we are here, after we went to Manos Abiertas, they asked us to write down a word. What are you thinking? On a post-it note. And the first night after I left, I said, I'm grateful. And I am so grateful for, you know, everything that I've been given, all the opportunities that I've been given. And like I said earlier, just the things that we have to take advantage of in the United States. Like, I'm going to go back and hit the ground running. Because
let's look how far PT can go. Come to a country like this and do some pretty amazing things with just our hands and our eyes and our heads and just touch some lives in places like this. So that's a good note to end that on while our classmates are over there playing Flip Cup. Thank you guys for telling me the story. I appreciate it.
Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast. It's time for the PT Final Exam Pop Quiz. Here's today's question.
Where do NPTE questions come from? Again, where do NPTE questions come from?
We'll be right back with the answer of today's PT Final Exam Pop Quiz. The PT Pinecast proudly supports the Wounded Warrior Project. Since 2003, the Wounded Warrior Project has been raising funds and awareness for the needs of injured service members, helping injured servicemen and women with aid and assistance, and to provide unique direct programs and services to meet their needs. Their continuing goal is to foster the most successful, well-adjusted generation of wounded service members in our nation's history. To find out how you can help the Wounded Warrior Project, visit them online at woundedwarriorproject.org. Okay, here's today's PT Final Exam Pop Quiz one more time.
Where do NPTE questions come from?
And the answer to the PT Final Exam Pop Quiz is...
NPT items are written by current physical therapists. They put together a big committee out at fsbpt.org. Material from current core physical therapy textbooks as their primary resource and put together questions for the NPTE.
Thanks for playing along at home, boys and girls. Remember, for your NPTE test prep, all you need is the PT Final Exam. Find them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they?
Sitting down with some more classmates. We're actually at a bar called A House. So the first question is always hardest in the PT Pinecast. What are we drinking? First, introduce yourself.
Oh, okay. Sarah.
And Sarah, you're drinking?
Margarita.
Liz?
Well, I'm Liz.
I'm the host. I can introduce you if I want.
And I'm also drinking a margarita.
All right. And we're at A House in Alajuela, Costa Rica. So the question I'm asking all the classmates has been a serious story. And by serious, I just mean something that touched you, something that's going to leave an impression. All right. Liz is going to go first. You want to go serious or go funny?
I'll go serious first.
Okay.
Okay.
Just frame this up because I've only really talked with some people that have been at Manos Abiertas. Our class is broken up into 4 different teams, and just set it up what your facilities were like.
So we were at the Adult Day Center. So basically it was a place that people come during the day, the day center, for these people who need a little extra help, and their families then, after working, pick them up and take care of them at night.
So approximate age of patients are going to be?
So it's all elderly, so okay. 60 to like 90.
So it's pretty different than what we were doing. We were doing kids, a couple of adults, but you guys were doing kind of the other end of the patient population spectrum. So cool.
So we have this one patient who has poliomyelitis active right now, which I've never seen before. He originally presented to us looking like a stroke patient, looking like hemiparesis on one side, and then we found out he had polio. So he had a lot of difficulty speaking, and it was really kind of hard to understand everything that was going on. But
plus he speaks Spanish.
True.
That's hard as well.
True. That kind of threw in a little bit of a twist there, too. We were there for 3 days, and so there was a lot going on because we had to see probably about 40 patients within those 3 days.
And what was your goal? Why were you guys seeing them? What were you evaluating them for?
So we were there doing cardiac rehab. So a lot of them had diabetes, hypertension, had strokes or heart attacks in the past. So we were there to try and help them currently get a little bit better with endurance and everything else. So, but this one patient we weren't really seeing as like intense as everybody else. But every time we went, me and Sarah would like notice him because he'd be like one of the first people to like talk to us and say hello and like welcome us at the door. The way he was walking, just within those 3 days, we noticed had gotten so significantly worse. And by the 3rd day, he was basically walking on the outside of his ankle. We were supposed to take him and do certain special tests, but instead we decided it was better to figure out a better way for him to be walking that he could continue with after we left. So we took a TheraBand and kind of wrapped it around his ankle. So we were helping him walk and showing him how he was supposed to be doing it with the cane. And then when we were going through the tests, he was like, no, I don't need the cane anymore. Like, I can walk without it. And was like so touched. And he was like just walking all over the place and was just like showing off and like doing such a good job and was walking so much better.
He didn't want anyone's help. Like, if they tried to stand
Why?
Near him.
Why did he want anyone's help anymore? What did he gain? Trust? Confidence?
He gained confidence because before he was basically hopping on one leg because his other foot was, I was just about to show you and realizing nobody else can see that.
It's a podcast. There's no video here.
So he's pretty much walking on the outside of his foot. So like it was so turned outward that he couldn't really put any pressure on it.
Right.
It was
he'd
like
roll his ankle.
Yeah. I was like trying to show our professor how he was walking and I like felt like I was going to break my foot and my ankle all at the same time. So yeah, so we tied the TheraBand around and we showed the PT like how he could do it every day and we wanted to leave it with him. So every time he came to the center, he was walking with that and able to put a little more pressure on the entire foot as opposed to just the outside ankle. And he was so thrilled with it. We actually had to like make him take breaks at some point. Because he was just like, no, I can keep going, I can keep going. We were like, well, your BP is kind of going up a little bit, but it's okay. Let's just sit here and then you can show us how you walk a little bit better.
So that's just a good story of what PT can actually do. It's not rocket science. I think a lot of times we overthink what we do, but you gave him some confidence and you gave one little tweak. You looked and saw what he needed. You gave it to him and you let him go and it worked.
And then he called me his girlfriend and that I was going to be staying with him forever. So
look, you're going international. But that's a cool interaction. That touched you a little bit when you can come down here and without, well, you speak a little bit of Spanish. I speak zero Spanish. But you come down here and you're talking in a second language, you can leave an impression like that. That's worth getting on the plane and coming all the way down here.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I think sometimes we overthink it, this whole PT thing. We spend 3 years in school. I was talking about this earlier with Amber and Lisa. We try to over-science the shit out of everything. But really, you recognize what he needed, you gave it to him, and you let him go.
Oh, you just saw the result.
That's it. We say that's it, but that's a big deal in his life. That's a big deal in that patient's life. And if that sticks around for a little bit, wow, good on you guys. I'm just looking for touching. It doesn't have to be serious.
Okay.
What left a mark on you?
Going to La Posada. So
which is what? That's different than
the new one, too.
Okay.
So Liz and I are on the same team, but we've gone to three different places now. Posada is like a home for teenage moms
where they can
be raised up until 18. So care is given for the moms and for the children.
How young are some of the moms?
12 years old.
Yeah.
Super young.
Yeah, that's young.
I kind of ignored it at the point where I couldn't accept it. Like, I didn't think that was a real thing until I met one of the first girls' mom, Alaya. Her mom, I think, was 14. There's actually a lot of stories, like, that you could probably hear from this place.
You're working with teen moms, and
yes.
The U.S., like, teen moms is, like, you know, 16, 17, 18.
Yeah.
But you're talking, like, not even teen moms, because 12 is not
right.
Teens. And that's...
And just trying to think about their stories, like some, like when we think about teen moms, it's just like a young girl who gets pregnant with her boyfriend and it just happens. But for these moms, they give us a background of where they're coming from. It could be domestic violence, abuse, rape, all the above. And then to think they're put in a situation where they're raising a child who may have delays. They're put in a situation where there's...
They are a child raising a child.
Yes. Yeah. They have no idea. So... We had to give a developmental course to kind of give them an outline on how a child should be presenting at certain ages. And the interest of some of the moms was kind of like, you would think if you're having a baby, you want to know everything and anything to have an idea of what to go. And the feedback that you got from it, the moms were just, some of them, it was nice to see that a lot of them did care and they want to like make their situation better. But then it was sad to see that a lot of, they were like behavioral questions. Because Deidre and I were in the, I think it was a 9 month to 2 year group. So it's like the terrible two stage.
Right.
But it's like terrible two times 10.
Sure.
Because they're in a situation where it's like 15 of them to one room.
Wow.
They sleep four kids and four moms to one room at night. So if one kid has a bad night, they all have a bad night. And then they're put into like a nursery, which is like a 30 by 15 foot room where there's 20 kids. And then if it's like one kid's bad, then they just react. And then seeing the interaction, it's like no wonder they're having behavioral issues. Like, you need to get them like out of here. And then just seeing like the applause, like once Laura translated that for me because I can't speak Spanish to tell them myself. Just seeing the reaction of them, like realizing like how much that affects their children was kind of I don't know, it was like nice and sad and frustrating all at the same time.
Yeah.
It's like it's nice to see someone cares, frustrating to see they're in that situation. And
I think the reason that I'm doing these interviews and these podcasts is because I think we heard about this trip for 2 years, our first 2 years of PT school, because our school's been doing this for 6 years now. But I don't think you really get it until you're here. I mean, you could tell me a story 1,000 times. You know, my professor, Professor Basil Valente, was a Franciscan friar. He said, don't tell me a story, show me a story. You can't write this stuff down. You know, you've got to hear it firsthand from the person who's actually living it and doing the treatment. So, and seeing them, yeah, and just knowing or trying to figure out what that patient's life is like. Because you say, well, I work with a bunch of teen moms. Okay, what's that like? Well, I'm talking 12.
Yeah.
And like, developmental
issues. I wouldn't, like, 12 isn't even a teen.
Right,
like,
in my house,
I'm like, you can't even say teen mom. And you'll see a teen mom dropping off one of their, so I had quotation marks.
You're air quoting on a podcast. How many margaritas have you had?
Just, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, this is, like, her older sister dropping her off. Like, I don't think this is, like, a mom dropping her child
off.
They're children.
Say it one more time.
They're kids.
Yeah.
Sorry.
They are. They're kids.
Kids dropping off
kids.
Infants.
And then to think that some of these kids have delays, they have no idea.
Even harder.
Yeah.
And where are they going home to? They might not know.
And then hearing a story about some of these moms who never wanted a child, they'll just leave and they'll never, like, they'll go out for a day. Like, once they turn 18, they get kicked out of the house. But sometimes they'll leave and just not come back for their child.
So we should also preface it that these moms are there because their families kicked them out of the house because they were abandoned because they were pregnant. And so some of the issues also are that once the girls turn 18, once they're 18, like, they're not allowed to stay here anymore. They're considered adults. Then the issue continues because then we've heard stories that some of them just leave for a weekend and abandon their kids and don't come back.
Because they know
so
what's coming.
So it's like the cycle
continues. All right, so you got a funny story for me or what? You got a moment that's going to make you giggle after this?
What was our nun's name?
Rosalina.
Rosalina.
Sister Rosalina.
Hermana Rosalina.
Hermana. Sorry, my Spanish.
And
is...
she was...
Or Rosalina.
She is the oldest nun there. I think she's 96.
96, 95, yeah.
And she is probably the strongest.
She's a bully.
Woman there. She's a bully. She has the strongest grip out of anyone. She'll, like, literally crush your hands until you have them all in, like, one line. And then if you don't react to her, she'll start to dig her nail into
you. Yeah.
But she's smiling at the
nuns
same time.
Nuns just know the way.
And all the nuns, all the other nuns are like, yeah, we don't sit next to her in church because when we hold our hands, like, to pray, she'll squeeze our hands and, like, she's like, she just loves pain. Like, I don't know. But she,
nuns,
like, laughs
they
and
do.
She's so cute. She's
that's
like,
a prereq for being a nun.
She's no taller than 5 feet. But we had to do a 30-second chair stand test, and it turned into a tug-of-war test because she was like, okay, I'm just going to have this girl who's, like, my size. I can take her, whatever. Every time I stand up, I'm going to yank on her. So then it turned into me in front of her trying to help her up to Laura, our translator, stabilizing me because she was pulling me so hard, like, on top of her for each.
Oh my god, yeah. At one point it was like three of us against her, and we were just like, no, you're not gonna pull us over.
You guys can't take the 90 something year old nun?
She was that strong, fuerte, muy fuerte.
Liz was teaching another nun how to elevate her leg for some swelling she was having, and our little 96 year old nun came over and, like, yanked her leg up.
And I have very tight hamstrings. It hurt.
So what's your funny story? It doesn't have to be nun related.
I don't know if this is funny, but...
We're going to find out.
So another nun that we were working with, she's in her 70s. And she has Alzheimer's. She's the sweetest little thing. So me and Sarah go in and, like, pretty much wake her up in the afternoon because she's having, like, a... 3 hour siesta.
Which should be a thing in America.
Oh my god, I would love it. So we go in there and she wakes up and she gives us, like, she rolls her eyes and then just starts saying, like, she loves us. But I think she's also thinking, like, why are you here?
Yeah.
Get out of my room. And, like, at one point she was just like, why are all these young people in my room? And so she doesn't really understand what's going on, but, like, at the same time, everything we're doing, we're, like, yanking her out of bed, not yanking her, but, like, trying to get her out of bed, and we have to, like, almost do a dependent transfer.
Forcefully removed from slumber.
Yeah, so, I mean, she looks comfortable, so she does want to get up and exercise. She'll, like, get up, and then me and Sarah will be sitting on either side of her, and, like, she'll seem like she's about ready to get up. And then all of a sudden, she'll just, like, tip over to one side and, like, be leaning on my shoulder and be like, I'm going to sleep. No, no, no more.
Human pillow.
It's like, we're about to, and she can walk, but like a lot of the time she's in a wheelchair because it's just easier. So we're trying to get her up and walking, and she does a little shuffling walk. When she knows that we're about to do it, she literally tips over to the side, and it's just like, oh, no, no, no. She's hilarious. And then the only thing that she says, she never complains. She just says, I will love you for life in Espanol.
Say it in Spanish, though. It's just better. It's better for the podcast. Say it in Spanish. I can't.
Me encanto para toda mi vida.
English is such an ugly language. That's so. What you said was so beautiful. English is, it would not do it justice.
I think that's what that means. If it translates into something else, don't call me out on it.
Final question is, why should a PT or a PT student do a trip like this? It shouldn't be for the weather.
No, not
for the
margaritas. Or the margaritas, even though that is
a
bonus.
Which are great. There's a double bonus right there.
I mean, I know no Espanol, and I get called on it all the time, especially by Sor Maria, who looks at Liz every time I said something.
No,
and she's
like,
but every time I would say something to Sor Maria, she would just look at Liz and say,
no entiende.
Which means, I don't
even
know.
Which means she doesn't know.
Oh, okay.
And I would just sit there smiling still, shaking my head, yes, right. I do not know. Besides that, you just get a whole global perspective about all the other things in the world that can happen. But it's not even just the world. It's opening your eyes to things that can probably be happening in the U.S. that you don't know about. The personal level of what you can affect with physical therapy, there's a lot of, like, deep, more, I don't know how to describe it, but it's not emotional, but it is personal. Like, you're, like, touching someone's life and you're making a difference and having them react to you in a way like, oh, I've never had this before, or even, or not even not had this before, but I don't have this nearly often enough, and you can kind of see that in their eyes.
Have you guys had a reaction? Because I have, where I've been told by the physio on site that that patient does not walk. With myself and another student, we said, fuck it, let's try it. And we've done it, and I've kind of, and the physios here don't like to give us much of a facial reaction, and we're from America, and what the hell do the white people know? But we've made a couple people to walk, and they've been able to do it, and I've kind of got like a half a smile out of them, like, oh shit, I guess the gringos are on to something with this PT business. But that's rewarding. It's going along with what you just said. That's affecting their life.
It's going to affect more than just them, though. It's affecting their caregivers, and you would think that they would want to push it more, because it's like, oh, let him do this, let him help me dress, or her, or whoever it is. And it's just like, it'll make it easier on you,
right,
too. Like, it makes the whole situation
easier. I'll give them credit. I'll give them, the caregivers here in Costa Rica, credit. They're outmanned and outgunned.
Yeah, no,
they're
totally.
100-1,
I
so that's why they're...
I caught myself doing that today when I was told I didn't have to change someone, and I got home and I was like, oh, okay, so I have to do this, but I'm going to be really quick about it and not have you help me and make this therapeutic.
Right. But so they're outmanned and outgunned. But when we come in, we say, I think this patient can walk, so I'm going to try to make them walk, but they're dealing with 100 more patients and limited resources. So why should somebody come on this trip? Why should a PT or a PT student pick a program based on having a trip like this in their curriculum?
Well, for me personally, this trip has, like, taken away everything else as far as, like, politics and whatever, and, like, just breaking it down to helping somebody. That's the reason I've become a PT, or I'm becoming a PT, is because I just want to help people the most personal way possible. So I feel like here you're not, as you were saying, thinking about it more scientifically. You're just like, what can I do right now that is going to be the best for you? And that's just been the most touching for me. It's just like kind of reinforced the reason I've gotten into the profession in the beginning. So I feel like if people really are coming into this profession with a genuine heart and thinking along those lines, then this trip will do nothing else than show you that.
It kind of strips away everything else and leaves only that. You are the only link between doing something and not doing something for that patient. You have to mention Ricky. How have we not brought Ricky up? Come on, talk about...
Fine.
So we're all paired up with residents, and you got Ricky.
Yeah.
Who is... I'm going to not censor myself because there's no FCC on podcast. He's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
You got a great resident.
Yeah, he's a chillin' dude.
So we think he's on the spectrum, autism spectrum,
yes,
right? And he's 16. I found out today he's 16.
Okay.
One of the caregivers told me.
So he's just awesome, but typical of autism, he's very anxious in certain situations and doesn't know how to express himself. And so definitely in big crowds and like being forced to do something that he doesn't want to do, like he has an intense reaction to it. But if you take him away from that and just kind of like give him some space and take some time to like really hang out with him, which is all I was really doing, he becomes so calm and the only thing he's doing is smiling.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need like anything else in the world, maybe other than my like sunglasses, which
he
looks
like,
really
he
cool
looks good
in.
Those, yeah. But the thing is, you figured that out because of your physical therapy education. Somebody would have said, well, he doesn't use his upper extremities well, so force him to do that. But you saw he's not going to react well to that. You picked that up. That's your clinical reasoning. I'm gonna get him out of where everybody is. I'm gonna take him away and let him just walk around and do his thing. Oh, and now he's easier to work with. He's doing what he wants, and now he's easier to work with.
And then he's totally relaxed and walking around, and like you said earlier today, he like almost just seems like another teenager walking around.
Every once in a while, so he does have that kind of nervous, kind of on edge, anxious, paranoid
anxious.
Look.
Yeah.
And he breathes heavy when he's around crowds. But today we were out at a excursion at a pool. We were spread out, you know, in the shade and amongst the trees. And it just looks like he doesn't have any, you can't tell by looking at Ricky that he has any issues. And then you look at him and there's always that split second that I see. It looks like he might just say something to, you know, he's nonverbal. It looks like he might just say, you know, hey, how's it going? ¿Qué pasa?
Yeah, there wasn't a time I didn't see him without a smile today.
He smiles a ton.
All the time.
But I think that was because we were so spread out. Like, it wasn't, you know, we weren't, you know, he's in a house with 25, 30 other guys. So there's always somebody on top of him. Today there wasn't, and that's what he needs. But that's what PT is, recognizing what you need or the patient needs and then giving it to them. We shouldn't overcomplicate those two steps. The first one is hard. The second one should be easy. And I think a lot of times we overcomplicate that second step. Ricky's a badass.
Yeah, and he looks great in my sunglasses. I might just give them to him.
I'm sorry for... So if you had to sum up this trip or this interaction in one sentence, what are you going to say if you had to do it? Someone's already taken Pura Vida. You can't say Pura Vida. That's a cop out.
No.
If you were going to get a tattoo to represent this trip, what would the tattoo... It could just be a picture. It could be words. What would it be? Liz, you're going to tattoo... To represent this trip, what is on the tattoo? What is it? Is it words? Is it pictures?
I love helping people.
That's what you're going to get?
That's it.
I heart helping
people.
But again, do it sexy in Spanish.
Me encanto ayudar a todas personas.
All right. Sarah, no pressure to top that, but...
It sounds so lame and so typical. But
doesn't,
being
just
present,
go.
Being present with people.
That's
and
not lame.
Being,
that's an important fucking thing.
Yeah, just being able to sit with them and actually like take in everything,
yeah.
Like physically, emotionally, whatever.
You just said that was lame, and I think that's terribly important no matter what setting you're in, because
yeah.
I think in America, as soon as our patient interaction starts, I'm on the clock, I need to start doing.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you need to just be present and see what they need.
Yeah.
So I think being present is not lame. I think it's terribly important.
Okay. Bien.
On that note, cheers, clink some glasses, and thanks for being on the show. That's it. Perfect.
Thanks.
Follow us on Twitter at PT Pintcast and online at ptpintcast.com. It's like TMZ, except with way more important information. And no Miley Cyrus. Okay, it's not like TMZ at all. The PT Pintcast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.